Welcome to AeroTech News Radio. I'm Paul Kinnison, your host, publisher of AeroTech News and its group of 11 aerospace and military-based newspapers located here in California, Arizona, and Nevada. On this week's program, we're going to bring you top stories from AeroTech and its group of publications. We also have, as our in-studio guest, Rebecca will be talking to Tony Frakoviak from AV Tailwinds. Then later in the hour, Lisa will be in, and she'll bring us pages from the past. Also want to just do a quick reminder for an event coming up August 9th and 10th. Tickets are still available for the Global Leadership Summit, presented by Willow Creek Community Church and hosted locally via satellite at Desert Vineyard. You can get your tickets, go online to desertvineyard.org. It's a great program, and the main focus this year is on Lead Where You Are. Chance for everybody, whether it's from the home, in your business, or just in the community, everybody has an opportunity to lead and serve. So it's a great program. Check it out. Again, you can go to desertvineyard.org. And so at this point, let's go ahead and turn it over to Adrian and give us the news.
Good morning. Boeing opened a state-of-the-art information security innovation lab in Huntington Beach, California, July 17th. It will be used to prototype innovative cybersecurity technologies using live networks in a secure yet real-world environment. The lab's wide area network backbone, coupled with Boeing Information Solutions' Cyber Range in a Box, allows modeling and simulation of complex missions and advanced threats to create resilient security solutions. CRIAB is a compact portable system used to support the development, test, and experimentation of cyber tools and techniques, as well as to train today's network defenders. Boeing Information Security Solutions Director Pierre Bieth said, quote, "Boeing has made substantial investments in cybersecurity research and development over the past several years, including opening our Cyber Engagement Center in Maryland and completing numerous acquisitions. The Huntington Beach Lab continues the expansion of our efforts to develop and deliver innovative technologies and capabilities that support cyber operations for our customers today and into the future," end quote. The lab contains isolated networks as well as networks securely connected via Boeing LabNet, which provides connectivity to all the company's technology centers worldwide. The isolated networks allow threats and defenses to be modeled in a safe, repeatable environment. United Technologies Corporation announced July 23rd it has reached agreement to sell its Rocketdyne unit, currently part of Pratt & Whitney, to GenCorp Incorporated for $550 million. The transaction is expected to close in the first half of next year. As previously announced, proceeds from the sale will be used to repay a portion of the short-term debt incurred to finance the proposed acquisition of Goodrich Corporation. The transaction is subject to customary closing conditions, which include regulatory approvals. Scott Seymour, GenCorp Chief Executive Officer, said, quote, "We see great strategic value in this transaction for the country, our customers, partner supply base, and our shareholders. The combined enterprise will be better positioned to compete in a dynamic, highly competitive marketplace and provide more affordable products for our customers. In addition, this transaction almost doubles the size of our company and provides additional growth opportunities as we build upon the complementary capabilities of each legacy company that has enabled a generation of human space travel and national security launch services. We have the opportunity to build upon the proud heritage of our companies, the ability to create increased value for our customers, and best of all, to secure the future of both organizations." End quote. Rebecca?
Thank you, Adrian. Karina Dries is the new Mojave Air and Spaceport Director of Economic Development. She brings more than a dozen years of experience in strategy and business development and has held management positions for growing technology companies, ranging in size from startups to large public companies. She told AeroTech that Mojave, quote, "has a strong brand as a great location for conducting research and development for commercial space," end quote. She added that Mojave is an ideal location to build up this industry. The Mojave Air and Spaceport has a myriad of advantages, which include its infrastructure developments of fine taxiways and long runways. There is a modern infrastructure such as the high-speed internet cable being installed for airport tenants. Mojave has had a spaceport license since 2004, so its logistics are set up for spaceflight tests. Another advantage is that the airport and its tenants have a very strong, mutually supportive relationship. The Air and Spaceport provides support services such as security operations and maintenance, and gives quiet support to its tenants. California has great universities that graduate top engineers, so there is a skilled labor pool. The community of Mojave is revitalizing itself. Ms. Dries has only been at Mojave for a few weeks, but has found that the airport staff is a fantastic team with a talented group of people. She earned a Bachelor of Science degree from Arizona State University and an MBA from the Mitt Sloan School of Management. She also attended the International Space University Summer Session in Beijing. In 2007, Ms. Dries and Stuart Witt, Mojave Chief Executive Officer, collaborated to develop an Access to Space Action Plan for commercial operations of the next generation of space transportation vehicles from Mojave. AV students prepare to leave for space camp. Northrop Grumman Foundation will be sponsoring 48 middle school students and 16 middle school teachers from across the country to attend Space Camp July 28th to August 3rd at the U.S. Space and Rocket Center in Huntsville, Alabama. Students attending the camp will participate in a space adventure, which will be including building launching rockets, experiencing weightlessness in an astronaut training simulator, and learning about space travel preparation. The teachers selected to attend Space Camp will be given the tools to enhance how they present science, technology, engineering, and mathematics concepts in their classrooms, according to a Northrop Grumman Foundation press release. The release also stated that students selected for sponsorship were chosen based on their potential to continue to perform well in the areas of math and science. Two of the students, Brian Pease and Ethan Malero, are from the Antelope Valley in California. Pease is a student of Endeavor Middle School, and Malero is a student at Joe Walker Middle School. Pease was tasked with writing an essay that described when, how, and why the human species needs to start a new civilization on the moon. In his conclusion, he wrote, quote, "I believe that we should go back to the moon for scientific purposes and to make a new home for us. If the Earth were to be destroyed from war or natural disaster, humankind has a chance to continue on and repopulate the Earth if needed. It would also be a launching point to explore other planets. People need to feel pride in exploration again," end quote. However, while Malero was not required to write an essay, he was selected because he excelled in math and science. He said those were his favorite subjects, and he also participates in a LEGO robotics team. Malero would like to have a career as an engineer. Space Camp is for students between the ages of 12 and 14, and who will be in either 7th or 8th grade during their attendance. The Northrop Grumman Foundation has sponsored students annually for the past 4 years. For more information about Space Camp, visit www.spacecamp.com. Adrian, what else do you have for us?
Well, General Mark Welsh III addressed a range of issues July 19th during his Senate confirmation hearing to be the next Air Force Chief of Staff. He has commanded U.S. Air Forces in Europe since December 2010. General Welsh answered questions from members of the Senate Armed Services Committee about budget and force structure, sexual assault prevention and response, the defense strategic guidance, and other areas. The general said, quote, "I am very excited about the opportunity to work with you to find ways to reduce our deficit and to keep our Air Force trained, equipped, and ready to defend our nation, its citizens, and its interests. I'll admit it, I'm even more excited about the opportunity to lead the men and women who serve in the world's finest Air Force," end quote. Welsh said America's airmen move people and cargo to every corner of the world. They conduct intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance operations for every combatant commander. When asked about the Air Force's fiscal 2013 budget request, Welsh said that should he be confirmed, he would look to improve the process by which the service develops its budget proposals. Quote, "I believe that there needs to be a more inclusive coordination process on the budget. I think what matters the most today is how we move forward from here," end quote. The general vowed that if confirmed, he would work closely with the National Guard Bureau, Air National Guard, Air Force Reserve, State Guard leaders, and others on future deliberations. Now a word from our participating sponsors. This is Aerotech News.
Are you plane crazy? The Mojave Transportation Museum Foundation invites you to Plain Crazy Saturday, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on the third Saturday of each month. This Saturday, August 18th, Plain Crazy Saturday is a free family event at Mojave Air and Spaceport. Bring the kids, get your camera, wear a hat, and don't forget the sunscreen. For more information, call 661-824-2481.
Hey, Dad, let's go to Plain Crazy Saturday.
Business owners, are you looking for more customers? Think military. Discover the benefits of marketing to the military and aerospace industry, this valley's main economic driving force. Aerotech News can provide your business with unparalleled access to this lucrative market via print, web, email, and broadcast. Aerotech News and Desert Wings, a natural combination, a powerful marketing tool. Call us today at 945-5634. That's 945-5634.
Jethawks baseball is in full swing, and this weekend there are three great reasons to bring the family and friends out to the ballpark. Friday night, the Jethawks will light up the summer sky with a fireworks extravaganza to the music of Michael Jackson. That's right, the Jethawks will be honoring the King of Pop with a one-of-a-kind fireworks show that pays tribute to the music of Michael Jackson following the game. There will be MJ-themed promotions, a dance contest, and a fireworks show that's sure to thrill the audience. Saturday, the Jethawks will be giving away a Jethawks t-shirt that features the names of all 105 who've made it to the Major League. This one-of-a-kind giveaway shirt will be handed out to the first 1,000 fans in attendance. So get here early to grab this collector's item t-shirt. Finally, the homestand wraps up with Kids Eat Free Sunday. The first 1,000 kids 12 and under will receive a free hot dog, chips, and soda. Families are also invited out onto the field prior to the game to play catch, and kids get to run the bases following the game. There are lots of great reasons to enjoy the summer sun out at the ballpark this weekend. To purchase your tickets or check out the rest of the promotional schedule, go to Jethawks.com. We'll see you at the ballpark.
We are here today in studio with Tony Frakoviak. He is the Vice President, Treasurer, and Safety Officer of Antelope Valley Tailwinds out here in Lancaster, California. Good morning, Tony, and thank you for joining us.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm glad you could come out today. Before we get started with information about AV Tailwinds, tell us a little about yourself.
Well, I was born in Erie, Pennsylvania so many years ago, and I moved to this area in 1996. I worked at NASA Dryden Flight Research Center for a while doing research models. Now I'm just flying every day. And I've started radio control modeling in 1971, started competition in 1975, and I've been on six U.S. world teams doing competition aerobatics, won the U.S. Nationals twice, and and now I compete just friendly, just have fun, and I'm out at the club field almost every nice day.
So you've got a lot of experience with model aviation then.
Yeah, I'd like to tell people if I had a nickel for every minute I've spent staring up in the sky, I'd be retired by now.
But, how old were you when you first got interested in model aviation?
Well, I used to build plastic models when I was a kid, you know, 5-6 years old. And then my dad told me, you know, you could build models that actually fly, and that pretty much got me going. I started off with, you know, maybe some people recognize Comet and Gillow's rubber-powered kits, and built a few of those, and then flew some what they call control line, where the airplanes are on cables. And then got into radio control in 71. Used to do a lot of flying in the park next to my house with small control line and rubber-powered models. I also fly helicopters some. Done a little bit of everything in model aviation.
So are you still building your models today, or do you just buy?
Well, it's hard. It's sort of hard to build these days. There's so many what they call almost ready-to-flies, or ARFs, that are really economically priced and built pretty well. So it's easy to go that route instead of actually building your models. But our club is actually going to have a building competition here the next few months where we're trying to get a few folks inspired to actually, you know, use some glue and put a kit together again.
How fun.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Really exciting. Can you tell us a little of the history of AV Tailwinds?
Well, there's been modeling in this area for many, many years. Modelers used to fly on the Roseman Lake Bed, south, on the, you know, the south section of Roseman Lake Bed. And then in the late 60s, early 70s, they started to organize a group because they wanted to have an actual model airplane field. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of places in the, around this area where people can go to fly models, you know, the lake beds, vacant roads, and things like that. But in 1972, the Antelope Valley Tailwinds was chartered and incorporated, and they built the field that was originally a Los Angeles County park. And the field is on Challenger Way in between Avenue G and F,
okay.
Just east of the current landfill. Several years ago, Waste Management bought the property from the park system, and now we're actually on Waste Management property, and we have a very nice agreement with them where we have the field, the property at no cost. We have put in most of the improvements that there. We have a 600-foot paved runway and shade areas and restrooms and such, a separate model helicopter area. It's really a very nice field, one of the nicest really in this area.
Oh, and when do you guys normally fly?
Well, it varies. If people live in the Antelope Valley very long, they kind of notice how windy it can get around here. So most of the guys go out in the morning and fly usually when the wind is down. You know, there'll be people at the field at, you know, 7, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, and usually until about 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. If the day's nice, there'll be people there all the time. And this is during the week and the weekends because we have a fair number of retired people and that fly during the week, and then the working people come out on the weekends.
Mm-hmm. If someone wants to come out and visit, is that something you allow?
Oh, absolutely. Spectators are more than welcome. We just ask that they stay out of the pit area unless they're escorted in by one of the club members.
That's great. How many members do you have?
Right now we have 78 members. We're on a new cycle of membership renewals and such. We ended the last year with a little over 100 members. Our members range from, well, we have a two-year-old, Annalise Aberson. She hasn't started flying yet, but she's out at the field a lot more than other members, and up to 80-year-old people. A pretty wide group.
Yeah. What are the requirements to become a member?
Well, basically all we require is that you have an interest in model airplane flying and that you are also a member of the Academy of Model Aeronautics.
Okay.
That's a national organization, and that's part of our agreement with Waste Management because the Academy of Model Aeronautics has an insurance coverage for liability insurance that would cover any accident that might happen
right.
at the field, and also gives Waste Management an additional insurance. So you have to be a member of the AMA and then pay your dues with our club.
And how does someone go about joining the AMA?
Well, the AMA has a website. It's modelaviation.org. There's also a link to the AMA on our club website, and our club website is avti.org. You can join online with the AMA, or you can do the old snail mail and print out a form and mail it into them. They'll issue you a membership card, and then at that point you can become a member of our club.
That sounds great. What about people who don't already know how to fly model aircraft?
Well, we have several instructors in the club. I'm one of them, and on our website we have a list of other people who are doing instructing, and you can get together with one of them and begin a training program. It's all somewhat informal, but one of the things that we use in training is a device called a buddy box. And basically it hooks up two of the transmitters, and then the instructor can either give the student control or take control back to keep from crashing the airplane.
Right.
And the training program depends entirely upon how often a person can come out to fly and what their natural talent is.
Do you know approximately, on average, how long does it usually take someone to learn?
Well, it's hard to put an average down. I've seen people learn to fly in as little as a weekend and oftentimes as long as, you know, several months. But it is a skill to learn. In some ways, it's even more difficult than flying full-scale aviation because
right.
you have to stay oriented with the airplane, where in a full-scale, if you give it right, it's going to go right.
Right.
With a model, as it moves around in the sky, you have to stay oriented with it. And of course, you don't have the instruments in front of you either to tell you what the airspeed is or your altitude is.
Right.
But there are many easy-to-fly airplanes out there that are used as trainers. And with a little bit of help, you can give it a try.
If you were going to recommend what to start with for someone new to the activity, what airplane would you suggest?
Well, there's an awful lot that are out there. Right now, if you go to the hobby shop, there are a lot of very simple, low-cost airplanes that you can buy and take to the park near your house and fly. Some of them are better than others. There is an airplane that you can buy through Horizon Hobbies called an Apprentice, which is actually a pretty good airplane. It's ready to fly out of the box and doesn't cost too much. One of the big things that have changed in the hobby in the last few years is the power plants, because it used to be that we all ran what used to be called glow-powered motors, internal combustion engines, really. And now there's been a big switch to electric power because the battery technology has improved a lot, and it gives you the flight duration and the performance now. So I would probably recommend going with an electric model like that.
Okay.
It's very easy to set up, not a whole lot to learn how to adjust.
Yeah. You mentioned that you've flown lots of different types of model aircraft. Do you have a favorite?
Well, right now, probably my favorite is doing pattern flying, and that's a competition aerobatics, where you're given a sequence of maneuvers that you learn to, you know, you practice, learn to fly, and when you go to a competition, you're judged on each one of those maneuvers. My competition is a little more informal now than it used to be, but I still enjoy going out and practicing the maneuvers and attending the occasional contest. Very close to that would probably be helicopters. Model helicopters right now can really do some amazing things. They're way more maneuverable and aerobatic than full-size helicopters. And you can see some of the videos of really good model helicopter flyers on YouTube, and it's absolutely amazing what they can do with those machines.
You know. What type of airplanes do the other members of AVTI?
It's really very varies widely. We have all kinds. There's what we call scale models, which are replicas of full-size airplanes. We have several members who are active in doing that, several that actually go to contests for that. Then there's your traditional sport model, which is just kind of a kick-around, burn-holes-in-the-sky type model. And then there's the trainers, the easy-to-fly airplanes, usually a high wing, you know, looks kind of like a Cessna airplane. And then there's also sailplanes that a lot of people do where they'll usually use an electric motor in the front to get it up to altitude and then shut the motor off and then just use the rising currents in the air to stay up. So it's hard to, you know, it's really a very widely varied sport, a lot of different facets.
Do you have... do some of the members bring out their kids with them? Is it like a family thing?
Oh, absolutely. Like I say, Derek Abramson and his wife bring their baby out, Annalise, a lot. In fact, she was out there the day before she gave birth. So, you know, we have all kinds. There's also other members that bring their children out. We have some that fly, the kids fly. Not as many younger people as we'd like to see because it is a deal where if a person wants to fly, he's got to get a ride out to the field to fly.
Right.
So we'd like to see more younger people into it, but those that do come out have a good time.
Do you think it would be beneficial for younger people?
Oh, I think so. I think it teaches certain skills. You know, it's not only the act of flying the airplane that's involved, but it's in maintaining it, occasionally building it, and, of course, occasionally repairing it, you know. Setting up the radios and setting up the airplanes to fly properly. It is a skill to learn.
And it sounds like there's quite a bit of responsibility then for younger people to learn in maintaining their
aircraft. Well, yes, there is. There is. It's not very difficult, but you do have to keep your airplane up. And there are several, you know, safety regulations at the field to follow, like any other activity. We want to keep everything as safe as we can, too.
How much does it usually cost to get involved?
Well, like I said, that varies, and it's my usual answer to that is how much do you want to spend? Because you can spend as little as you really want in this hobby. You can spend as much as you want in this hobby. And, of course, we're more interested in radio control, but there are also what we call free flight models, which are very simple. They pretty much fly on their own. And then there's control line airplanes. But if you go to the hobby shop, probably, you know, $150 will get you something that'll fly pretty well.
Okay.
Your usual typical trainer that we see at the field, you probably have more like $300 or $400 and everything. And then when you get into it, you can build actual turbine-powered jets and spend $15,000 on them. So it's a very widely, you know, wide sport.
Okay. Do you guys ever use, like, the simulators, like computer simulators, to teach how to fly, and do those actually work?
Oh, yeah. The simulators are actually very good these days. They've improved dramatically in their graphics and how they work in their realism. They're actually a very good tool to learn how to fly, and we recommend them. We bring them out a lot of times to some of our events. Like we have a Christmas air show usually in late November, early December, and we'll set up a simulator there so people can try it. But they are very, very good tools to learn how to fly, particularly for learning to fly helicopters. They're really good realism for learning to fly model helicopters.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that it would be more helpful for that. We're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our sponsors, but when we come back, I'm going to ask you about that Christmas air show you just mentioned.
Very good.
You're listening to Aerotech News Radio.
We're News Talk 1380.
Are you plane crazy? The Mojave Transportation Museum Foundation invites you to Plane Crazy Saturday, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on the third Saturday of each month. This Saturday, August 18th, Plane Crazy Saturday is a free family event at Mojave Air and Spaceport. Bring the kids, get your camera, wear a hat, and don't forget the sunscreen. For more information, call 661-824-2481.
Let's go to Plane Crazy Saturday.
Business owners, are you looking for more customers? Think military. Discover the benefits of marketing to the military and aerospace industry, this valley's main economic driving force. Aerotech News can provide your business with unparalleled access to this lucrative market via print, web, email, and broadcast. Aerotech News and Desert Wings, a natural combination, a powerful marketing tool. Call us today at 945-5634. That's 945-5634.
Jethawks baseball is in full swing, and this weekend there are three great reasons to bring the family and friends out to the ballpark. Friday night, the Jethawks will light up the summer sky with a fireworks extravaganza to the music of Michael Jackson. That's right, the Jethawks will be honoring the King of Pop with a one-of-a-kind fireworks show that pays tribute to the music of Michael Jackson following the game. There will be MJ-themed promotions, a dance contest, and a fireworks show that's sure to thrill the audience. Saturday, the Jethawks will be giving away a Jethawks t-shirt that features the names of all 105 who've made it to the Major League. This one-of-a-kind giveaway shirt will be handed out to the first 1,000 fans in attendance. So get here early to grab this collector's item t-shirt. Finally, the homestand wraps up with Kids Eat Free Sunday. The first 1,000 kids 12 and under will receive a free hot dog, chips, and soda. Families are also invited out onto the field prior to the game to play catch, and kids get to run the bases following the game. There are lots of great reasons to enjoy the summer sun out at the ballpark this weekend. To purchase your tickets or check out the rest of the promotional schedule, go to Jethawks.com. We'll see you at the ballpark.
Lawyers for the man who says he is the unknown victim abused by Penn State's Jerry Sandusky in a shower a decade ago say he plans to sue the university. Lawyers say they have gathered overwhelming evidence on details of the abuse. House Speaker John Boehner says he expects the Democrats' tax bill to be dead on arrival in the House.
It's not going to happen. That's Speaker John Boehner's view of what he calls the massive tax increase in the Democrats' tax cut bill, which passed the Senate. The Senate bill increases taxes on families and businesses earning over $250,000 a year. That's a move Speaker Boehner says would weaken the economy.
ABC's Vic Ratner. Getting ready in London. It's the last ceremonial lighting of the torch before tomorrow's opening ceremony. The ceremony in Hyde Park. At least 60,000 people were there. Mitt Romney is in London despite earlier comments questioning the city's readiness to host the Olympics. He said today he expects the London Games to be highly successful. I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
We are back from our break. We're here talking with Tony Frakoviak from AV Tailwinds. He is the Vice President, Treasurer, and Safety Officer of the group. And before we went to break, he mentioned a Christmas air show. So, Tony, tell us about the Christmas air show. What is that?
Well, we try to hold one every year. It's basically for the charities in the Valley, a toy program that's done. We plan it. Right now we haven't finalized the date for this year, but we get together several pilots from around the area, also our club members, and put on a show. There'll be turbine-powered jets flying, really good helicopter flying, scale models, some aerobatics, some what's called 3D, which is kind of like extreme sports, you know, where the models will hover real close to the ground, do a lot of real wild maneuvers. And also, like we said, we'll have the simulator set up so that people can try it. And also, for the people really interested, we'll have a couple, three airplanes set up on buddy boxes so people can get a few minutes of actually flying a model airplane. We just ask that people maybe pay a small parking fee and, you know, bring in a load, right, you know, car load of people, and also to bring new unwrapped toys for the charity.
How fun.
Yeah.
Sounds really exciting. Can people make just donations if they'd rather give money towards it?
Have a cash box there, too. If people can't pick up a toy, they can donate cash or checks or whatever to the charity.
And this is annual?
Yeah, we've done it for the last couple of years. Every now and then we get some bad weather and get blown out. But we do our best on days like that. But right now it looks like we'll probably be the last weekend in November for that.
How many people do you have participate in the actual show?
We have about 15, 20 pilots that'll come in from different areas. It's really exciting stuff. The turbine jets are really amazing. They actually have turbine engines in them, just like real jets. They'll do 200 mile an hour and sound just like a real jet. Really fun stuff. And then some of the really good helicopter flying that can be done. We're hoping to get Kyle Dahl from Bakersfield. He's the 3D Masters champion this year. Extremely good flyer. Really puts on a show. And then just some of our club members flying our normal airplanes.
How fun. Well, make sure you get that date to me, because I'd like to go, and I'd also like to share it on the program so our listeners can come, too.
Absolutely.
Earlier we were talking about your competitive flying, and you mentioned it briefly, but can you go into a little more detail and tell us about that experience?
Mm-hmm. Well, when I was flying control line with my father, we used to go to a control line contest. That's when I lived in Erie, Pennsylvania. And we go to Cleveland once a year for a big contest there. And then I started radio control in 1971. And it really wasn't until about 1975 that I started actually competing in radio control. And I started off with aerobatics. Then it was a little bit different than it is now. But my first contest was towards the end of 1975. And then I picked it back up in 1976. And then just pretty much went gung-ho after that. In 1978, I was hired by a company in Cincinnati that was in the model airplane business. I did tool and die work for them, but I also did a lot of traveling and competing, representing for the company. Then I made my first U.S. world team in 1983, where it's sort of like the Olympics, really. Three people are picked to represent the U.S. at the Aerobatic World Championships. And the first one was held in Pensacola, Florida, and our team won first place as a team, and I placed eighth in the contest. Then I made the team in 1985, 1987, and 1989. It's held every 2 years.
Okay.
Missed a year in 91, and then made it again in 93, missed in 95, but then was on the team again in 1997. And was very fortunate. Was able to travel to a lot of different places in the world for these world championships. I've been to Austria and Germany. I've been to Australia a couple of times. We went to France twice, and even to the Netherlands for a world championship in '85. And you get to see a little bit of the world and get to see a little bit of other people. I'll never forget in the Netherlands. We were looking for the practice field, driving around, getting lost, and We stopped, saw a farmer on a tractor, walked up, and he literally was wearing wooden shoes, you know. I thought
wow.
That was just kind of a myth, but there he was wearing wooden shoes.
Really was.
And he could speak perfect English. He
wow.
directed us right to the model field.
Well, that's helpful.
Yeah.
Of all the places that you've been to, do you have a favorite?
Austria, I would have to say, was the most beautiful country I've been to outside the U.S. Just an amazingly beautiful area. And the area that they had the World Champions was sort of a travel area, you know, a tourist site, really. So driving from Regensburg, Germany to Austria on the Autobahn was a really nice experience, you know.
So for those of us who have never been to a world competition like that, can you set the stage and tell us what is it like, what actually happens while you're there?
Well, each of the world championships start off with a qualifying period where you fly, every individual flies a qualifying pattern. And then after that, the top 20, there's usually about 90 entrants total for the world championships. The top 20 then go into a semifinals, and then after that, the top 8 go into a finals. And the results are tabulated to not only come up with an individual world champion, but also a team champion. So each country is represented, and each country can win the team championships.
Okay. And what are the ratings for the competition based on? What do you get judged on?
You get judged on it's kind of like figure skating in a way, or the gymnastics competition that will be held at the Olympics. You get judged on each individual maneuver from 0 to 10, and then that's all tabulated to come up with your final score.
And you said that you won twice, right?
The team, I won twice the U.S. Nationals.
Okay.
And I was on three teams that won the team championship. The highest I've ever actually placed at a world championship was seventh.
Okay. Yeah. And do you have any particular memories that stand out from the others from that competitive time period?
Well, it is awfully nice. I can kind of understand the Olympians now. It is very, very nice to be standing on a pedestal and hear your country's anthem playing while they're raising the flag. So that really is a great honor.
Yeah, it sounds really exciting. Do you have a word of advice for anyone that would be looking to do something similar, whether it's in competitive model aviation or competitive anything else?
Well, just you have to work hard. You have to stay at it. You have to put a lot of practice in, and you have to devote yourself to it. It took a lot of effort on my part during that time period when I was really doing it, but it was very worthwhile. You know, to quote a famous entertainer, model airplanes have been very, very good to me.
Yeah, it's great. And you said that the website is, one more time.
Our club website is avti.org.
Okay.
You can go to our website, and there'll be links to the Academy of Model Aeronautics, where you can join that organization to get involved with our club.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It was my pleasure.
You are listening to AeroTech News Radio.
We're going to take a short break, but before we do, I'd like to talk to you about a short feature we're going to include on AeroTech News Radio every week. It has nothing to do with aerospace or defense, but everything to do with how we try and do business at AeroTech News. This is a short segment called Integrity Moments, hosted by author and business innovator Rick Box. Rick is the president and founder of Integrity Resource Center, a nonprofit organization dedicated to building integrity and faith in the workplace. Rick's vast experience in banking, public accounting, consulting, and as an entrepreneur, combined with his extensive knowledge of practically applying God's Word to the workplace, has equipped him to serve thousands of business leaders, including Paul and me, as we have approached him for counsel and advice on the challenges we've encountered over the years in operating AeroTech News. In fact, we joke that we've unwittingly provided Rick with material on several occasions for his Integrity Moments broadcasts and emails, but we all benefit from his wise and caring insights on various business and relationship issues that we all face as part of everyday life, both in and out of the workplace. So check out this Integrity Moment, and we'll be back with more AeroTech News Radio.
Here's Rick Box, founder of Integrity Resource Center, with today's Integrity Moment.
Our daughter Megan learned of a costly error at her grad school that needed clarified promptly. While Megan was processing the situation, Kathy jumped into action, making calls and helping her daughter solve this problem. Later, the university staff called Megan to inform her that the problem could be resolved, but in the future, they expected her to handle her own problems. Kathy suddenly realized she needed to release her daughter to adulthood. Hannah in 1 Samuel 1 said about her son Samuel, "So now I give him to the Lord. For his whole life he will be given over to the Lord." Turning loose of control can be hard for a mother, but it also can be hard for those in business. Are you giving God control of your work?
For more information about integrity in the workplace, visit integritymoments.com. That's integritymoments.com.
Are you plane crazy? The Mojave Transportation Museum Foundation invites you to Plane Crazy Saturday, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on the third Saturday of each month. This Saturday, August 18th, Plane Crazy Saturday is a free family event at Mojave Air and Spaceport. Bring the kids, get your camera, wear a hat, and don't forget the sunscreen. For more information, call 661-824-2481.
Let's go to Plane Crazy Saturday.
Business owners, are you looking for more customers? Think military. Discover the benefits of marketing to the military and aerospace industry, this valley's main economic driving force. Aerotech News can provide your business with unparalleled access to this lucrative market via print, web, email, and broadcast. Aerotech News and Desert Wings, a natural combination, a powerful marketing tool. Call us today at 945-5634. That's 945-5634.
Jethawks baseball is in full swing, and this weekend there are three great reasons to bring the family and friends out to the ballpark. Friday night, the Jethawks will light up the summer sky with a fireworks extravaganza to the music of Michael Jackson. That's right, the Jethawks will be honoring the King of Pop with a one-of-a-kind fireworks show that pays tribute to the music of Michael Jackson following the game. There will be MJ-themed promotions, a dance contest, and a fireworks show that's sure to thrill the audience. Saturday, the Jethawks will be giving away a Jethawks t-shirt that features the names of all 105 who've made it to the Major League. This one-of-a-kind giveaway shirt will be handed out to the first 1,000 fans in attendance. So get here early to grab this collector's item t-shirt. Finally, the homestand wraps up with Kids Eat Free Sunday. The first 1,000 kids 12 and under will receive a free hot dog, chips, and soda. Families are also invited out onto the field prior to the game to play catch, and kids get to run the bases following the game. There are lots of great reasons to enjoy the summer sun out at the ballpark this weekend. To purchase your tickets or check out the rest of the promotional schedule, go to Jethawks.com. We'll see you at the ballpark.
And welcome back to Aerotech News Radio. At this point, we'll go ahead and turn it over to Lisa, who will bring us pages from the past.
Thanks, Paul. And good morning to all our listeners. Thanks so much for tuning in to Aerotech News Radio. I'm Lisa Kinnison, Business Manager of Aerotech News and Review. In this segment of the program, we'd like to go back into the Aerotech News archives and take a look at events and people that were in the news anywhere from 5 to 25 years ago today. If you're interested in our Aerotech News archives, we do have some back issues on file on our website. Just go online to www.aerotechnews.com and click on the PDF archive link at the very top of the page. You'll find back issues there, not only for Aerotech News, but for all of the military bases we serve in California, Arizona, and Nevada. For now, let's take a look back into the pages of past editions of Aerotech News. In the July 1987 edition of Aerotech News, our editor, Melanie Schulte, delivered a story on the development of the X-30, more popularly known as the National Aerospace Plane. A flying prototype of the X-30 was never completed, although the program did yield valuable insight into advanced materials and design before it was canceled in the early 1990s. In other news, NASA announced the award of 5 contracts to study the best way of establishing permanently manned bases on the moon. The Air Force successfully test-fired a full-size Titan 34D rocket near Edwards Air Force Base. This was the first launch of this type since the explosion of a Titan carrying a classified payload following its launch from Vandenberg Air Force Base in April 1986. McDonnell Douglas was awarded an Air Force contract to design and launch a particle beam weapon as part of President Reagan's Star Wars space-based defense system. And finally, we carried an article on findings of a JPL study on the planet Pluto. And I am going to say planet because it was a planet at the time. I had to mention this story for the obvious nostalgia factor and because the opening paragraph made me smile, especially when I think of my son's Bring Back Pluto t-shirt. Anyway, the story opened, the much maligned planet Pluto, which some astronomers have described as an asteroid masquerading as a planet because of its odd orbit and small size, has recently had its reputation salvaged, thanks to scientists at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratories. The article went on to discuss significant findings about Pluto's atmosphere, boosting the argument for its planetary status. Jumping ahead to the July 25, 1997 issue of Aerotech News, NASA and Lockheed Martin staff presented the X-33 Environmental Impact Progress Report to high desert community officials. McDonnell Douglas launched the first of a new generation of Navistar GPS satellites for the U.S. Air Force. We reported on plans by the Quadrennial Defense Review Panel to cut F-22 procurement from 438 to 339 aircraft. When production of the aircraft ended in 2011, the final procurement tally of operational aircraft stood at 187. Senior management officials of Lockheed Martin, British Aerospace, and Northrop Grumman met to continue the process of combining their company's fighter experience into an integrated team in their continuing progress toward winning the contract for the Joint Strike Fighter. Editor Stuart Iverson reported on the European Union's expected approval of the proposed Boeing-McDonnell Douglas merger. And our technology transfer consultant, Terry Rezik, reported on some new technology proposals that are still with us today, albeit in somewhat altered form. A cell phone network proposal that would allow you to use the same phone handset at home or away from home and allow your home or cell numbers to ring through to that single handset. Forward thinking at the time, but not anticipating today's reality of people who have ditched their landline altogether. Also covered was technology for automated driverless cars, in 1997 envisioned as running on magnetic tracks, and today's surpassed by the concept demonstrated in the Google driverless car. I really look forward to seeing this one to come to pass someday and taking a lot of stress out of driving from the Antelope Valley to Vegas or the longer and excruciatingly boring drive to Phoenix. Moving ahead 5 years to the July 26, 2002 edition of Aerotech, we carried a number of stories on the Airborne Laser Program. First off, that the Airborne Laser Aircraft, a significantly modified 747, made its first flight at McConnell Air Force Base in Kansas. We also reported on questions emanating from Congress about the feasibility and cost of the Airborne Laser Program, a debate which carried on for years and did finally culminate just this past spring when the ABL testbed was taken out of active service and consigned to the boneyard at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. In other news, the Northrop Grumman X-47A Pegasus experimental unmanned air vehicle successfully completed its first taxi test at the Naval Air Warfare Center China Lake. The U.S. Army's Hunter UAV, developed by TRW and Israeli Aircraft Industries, was flown and landed automatically during a test flight near Fort Huachuca, Arizona. And we reported on the transfer of 45 megahertz of 3G bandwidth from the U.S. Department of Defense to the U.S. telecommunications industry for commercial use. Also, since I wasn't here last week, I would like to mention a couple of items from the July 19, 2002 edition that should be noted, marking the anniversary of the first flight of the B-2 Spirit bomber on July 17, 1989, and the Apollo 11th moon landing on July 20, 1969.
5 years ago, in the July 27th issue of Aerotech News, we reported on the first flight of the X-48B, Boeing's blended wing body research aircraft, at NASA's Dryden Flight Research Center at Edwards Air Force Base. Boeing also began flight testing for Canada's first C-17 aircraft and posted its first profitable quarter since 2003 as it continued to build momentum against European rival Airbus. Northrop Grumman was awarded a production contract for three additional E-2D Advanced Hawkeye Airborne Early Warning Aircraft. Injured Iraq war veterans filed a lawsuit against the federal government, charging that they had been denied disability pay and mental health treatment. And President George W. Bush issued an order permitting the CIA to resume using, quote-unquote, enhanced interrogation measures against captives in the war on terror. The commentary weighed the benefit of these interrogation methods and the information gained as a result of their use against the damage done to America's reputation by allegations of torture, questions that continue to be debated today. And once again, with that thought that the more things change, the more things stay the same, I thank you for joining me on this week's look back into the Aerotech News archives.
Great. Thank you, Lisa. Really appreciate it. We're going to have time for maybe one more story, but also want to just mention you can read all these stories and more on the Aerotech News website. It's aerotechnews.com. And also, if you want to sign up for our free weekly email newsletter, just go to the aerotechnews.com website and click on the Join Our List tab. It's a free newsletter, brings you top stories from each of our papers every Friday. So with that, let's go ahead and go over to Adrian.
A July 6th incident in which a Hawaii Air National Guard F-22 pilot experienced a hypoxic symptom in flight during a routine training sortie has a known cause, which was an in-flight life support system malfunction, an Air Force official said July 17th. The official continued to explain that while the investigation is still underway, the Air Force categorizes this malfunction as a physiological cause known event. It is not one of the cases for which the service is still trying to determine why Raptor pilots have shown symptoms like disorientation and nausea in flight. The official said the Hawaii Air Guard pilot received a cockpit warning at the end of his training sortie from Joint Base Pearl Harbor Hickam that his onboard oxygen generation system was underperforming in delivering oxygen. The pilot experienced a hypoxic symptom and then activated the aircraft's emergency oxygen system, which enabled the pilot to safely return to the base. I'm Adrian Kitley for Aerotech News.
Looks like we have time for one more, so I'd like to share a snapshot of the nation's veterans. There are 21.8 million veterans in the United States, of which 20.2 million are males, according to the Census Bureau's Veterans Snapshot issued July 17th. 1.3 million veterans have served in more than one war, including more than 100,000 vets who have been in three wars, according to the data. California leads the nation with 2 million vets, followed by Florida and Texas, with 1.6 million vets each. Killen, Texas, home to Fort Hood, is the city with the highest percentage of veterans in its population, with nearly 30%. Veterans have a median income of just more than $35,000, which is nearly $10,000 higher than the average American. And with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Paul.
Great. Thank you, Rebecca. And with that, we're coming up to the close of the show. I want to thank everybody for listening. And if you have questions, ideas, suggestions, you can give us a call at aerotechnews.com. And the phone number is 945-5634. You can also email me at paulkinison@aerotechnews.com. That's Paul, K-I-N-I-S-O-N, @aerotechnews.com. And I want to say a special thank you to Adrian, Rebecca, our guest Tony, Lisa, and everybody else that's been part of the program. And we look forward to seeing you next week. Again, it's Aerotech News Radio, and we'll see you next week.